Thankfully, they did not crumble, maybe because Walt was paying more attention now. Freak squawked as the boat disappeared, and suddenly Walt and I were dangling under the griffin's belly, holding on to the ropes for dear life and bonking into each other as we flew above the skyscrapers of Manhattan. "Walt!" I yelled over the wind. "You really need to get a handle on that power!"
"Sorry," he shouted back.
My arms were aching, but somehow we made it to Brooklyn House without plummeting to our deaths. Freak set us down on the roof, where Bost was waiting, her mouth agape.
"Why are you swinging from ropes?" she demanded.
"Because it's so fun," I growled. "What's the news?" Behind the chimneys, a frail voice warbled.
"Hello?"
The ancient sun god Ra popped out. He gave us a toothless grin and hobbled around the roof, muttering,
"Weasels, weasels, cookie, cookie, cookie."
He reached into the folds of his loincloth and tossed cookie crumbs in the air like confetti. And yes, it was just as disgusting as it sounds. Bost tensed her arms, and her knives shot into her hands. Probably just an involuntary reflex, but she looked tempted to use those blades on someone, anyone. She reluctantly slipped the blades back into her sleeves.
"The news," she said. "I'm on babysitting duty, thanks to your Uncle Amos, who asked me for a favor. And Sadie Shubty is waiting for you downstairs. Shall we?"
Explaining Sadie and her Shabti would take a whole separate recording. My sister had no talent for crafting magical statues. That didn't stop her from trying. She'd gotten this harebrained idea that she could create the perfect Shabti to be her avatar, speak with her voice, and do all her chores like a remote-controlled robot. All her previous attempts had exploded or gone haywire, terrorizing Hufu and the initiates. Last week, she'd created a magical thermos with googly eyes that levitated around the room, yelling, "Exterminate! Exterminate!" until it smacked me in the head. Sadie's latest Shabti was Sadie Jr., a gardener's nightmare. Not being much of an artist, Sadie had fashioned a vaguely human figure out of red ceramic flower pots, held together by magic, string, and duct tape. The face was an upside-down pot with a smiley face drawn in black marker.
"About time."
The pot creature was waiting in my room when Walt and I came in. Its mouth didn't move, but Sadie's voice echoed from inside the face pot as if she were trapped within the Shabti. That thought made me happy.
"Stop smiling," she ordered. "I can see you, Carter. Oh, and, hello, Walt."
The pot monster made squeaky grinding noises as it stood up straight. One clunky arm rose and tried to fix Sadie's non-existent hair. Leave it to Sadie to be self-conscious around boys, even when she's made out of pots and duct tape. We traded stories. Sadie told us about the impending attack on the first gnome that was supposed to go down at sunrise on the equinox, and the alliance between Sarah Jacoby's forces and Apophis. Wonderful news. Just great. In return, I told Sadie about our visit with Toth. I shared the visions Apophis had shown me about our mother's precarious situation in the Duat, which made the pot monster shudder, and the end of the world, which didn't seem to surprise her at all. I didn't tell Sadie about Apophis's offer to spare me if I gave up Ra. I didn't feel comfortable announcing that with Ra just outside the door, singing songs about cookies. But I told her about the evil ghost Setna, whose trial would start at sunset in the Hall of Judgment.
"Uncle Vinny," Sadie said.
"Pardon?" I asked.
"The face that spoke to me at the Dallas Museum," she said. "It was obviously Setna himself. He warned me that we would need his help to understand the shadow execration spell. He said we'd have to pull some strings and free him before sunset tonight. He meant the trial. We'll have to convince Dad to free him.
I did mention that Toth said he's a murderous psychopath, right? The pot monster made a clucking sound.
Carter, it'll be fine. Befriending psychopaths is one of our specialties.
She turned her flowerpot head toward Walt.
You'll be coming along, I hope.
Her tone had a hint of reproach, like she was still upset that Walt hadn't attended the school dance/mass blackout party.
I'll be there, he promised. I'm fine.
He shot me a warning look, but I wasn't going to contradict him. Whatever he and Anubis were plotting, I could wait for him to explain it to Sadie. Jumping in the middle of the whole Sadie-Walt-Anubis drama sounded about as much fun as diving into a food processor.
Right, Sadie said. We'll meet you two at the Hall of Judgment before sunset tonight. That should give us time to finish up.
Finish up? I asked.
And who is us?
It's hard to read expressions on a smiley face pot, but Sadie's hesitation told me enough.
You aren't in the first gnome anymore, I guessed. What are you doing?
A small errand, Sadie said. I'm off to see Bess.
I frowned. Sadie went to see Bess in his nursing home almost every week, which was fine and all, but why now?
You do understand we're in a hurry.
It's necessary, she insisted. I've got an idea that might help us with our shadow project. Don't fret. Zia's with me.
Zia? It was my turn to feel self-conscious. If I were a flowerpot, I would have checked my hair.
That's why Bast is watching Ra today.
Why exactly are you and Zia...
Stop worrying, Sadie chided. I'll take good care of her.
And no, Carter, she hasn't been talking about you. I have no idea how she feels about you.
What? I wanted to punch Sadie Jr. in her ceramic face. I didn't say anything like that.
Now, she chided. I don't think Zia cares what you wear. It's not a date. Just please brush your teeth for once.
I'm going to kill you, I said.
Love you too, brother dear. Ta!
The pottery creature crumbled into pieces, leaving a mound of shards and a red clay face smiling up at me. Walt and I joined Bast outside my room. We leaned on the rail overlooking the great room while Ra skipped back and forth on the balcony, singing nursery songs in ancient Egyptian. Down below, our initiates were getting ready for the school day. Julian had a breakfast sausage sticking out of his mouth as he rummaged through his backpack. Felix and Sean were arguing over who stole whose math textbook. Little Shelby was chasing the other ankle biters with a fistful of crayons that shot rainbow-colored sparks. I'd never had a big family, but living at Brooklyn House, I felt like I had a dozen brothers and sisters. Despite the craziness, I enjoyed it, which made my next decision even harder. I told Bast about our plan to visit the Hall of Judgment.
I don't like it, she said.
Walt managed a laugh.
Is there a plan you'd like better?
She tilted her head.
Now that you mention it, no. I don't like plans. I'm a cat. Still, if half the things I've heard about Setna are true...
I know, I said, but it's our only shot. She wrinkled her nose.
You don't want me to come along? You're sure? Maybe I could get Nut or Shu to watch Ra.
No, I said. Amos is going to need help at the first gnome. He doesn't have the numbers to fend off an attack from both the rebel magicians and Apophis. Bast nodded.
I can't enter the first gnome, but I can patrol outside. If Apophis shows himself, I will engage him in battle.
He'll be at full strength, Walt warned. He's getting stronger by the hour. She lifted her chin defiantly.
I've fought him before, Walt Stone. I know him better than anyone. Besides, I owe it to Carter's family. And to Lord Ra.
Kitty!
Ra appeared behind us, patted Bost on the head, and skipped away.
Meow! Meow! Meow!
Watching him prance around, I wanted to scream and throw things. We'd risked everything to revive the old sun god, hoping we'd get a divine pharaoh who could stand toe-to-toe with Apophis. Instead, we got a wrinkly, bald troll in a loincloth.
Give me Ra,
Apophis had urged.
I know you hate him.
I tried to put it out of my mind, but I couldn't quite shake that image of an island in the Sea of Chaos, a personal paradise where the people I loved would be safe. I knew it was a lie. Apophis would never deliver on that promise, but I could understand how Sarah Jacoby and Kwai might be tempted. Besides, Apophis knew how to strike a nerve. I did resent Ra for being so weak. Horus agreed with me.
We don't need the old fool.
The war god's voice spoke inside my head.
I'm not saying you should give him to Apophis, but he is useless. We should put him aside and take the throne of the gods for ourselves.
He made it sound so tempting, such an obvious solution. But no, if Apophis wanted me to give up Ra, then Ra must be valuable in some way. The sun god still had a role to play. I just had to figure out what it was.
Carter, Bost frowned. I know you're worried about me, but your parents saved me from the abyss for a reason. Your mother foresaw that I would make a difference in the final battle. I will fight Apophis to the death if necessary. He won't get past me.
I wavered. Bost had already helped us so much. She had almost been destroyed fighting the crocodile god Sobek. She'd enlisted her friend Bess to help us, and then seen him reduced to an empty shell. She'd helped us restore her old master, Ra, to the world, and now she was stuck babysitting him. I didn't want to ask her to face Apophis again, but she was right. She knew the enemy better than anyone, except maybe Ra when he was in his right mind. All right, I said, but Amos will need more help than you can give, Bost. He'll need magicians. Walt frowned.
Who?
After the disaster in Dallas, we don't have many friends left. We could contact Sao Paulo and Vancouver. They're still with us. But they won't be able to spare many people. They'll be worried about protecting their own gnomes. I shook my head. Amos needs magicians who know the path of the gods. He needs us. All of us. Walt digested that silently.
You mean abandoned Brooklyn House?
Below us, the ankle biters shrieked with joy as Shelby tried to tag them with her sparking crayons. Hufu sat on the fireplace mantle eating Cheerios, watching 10-year-old Tucker bounce a basketball off the statue of Toth. Jazz was putting a bandage on Alyssa's forehead. Probably she'd been attacked by Sadie's rogue thermos, which was still on the loose. In the middle of all this, Cleo was sitting on the sofa, engrossed in a book. Brooklyn House was the first real home some of them had ever known. We'd promised to keep them safe and teach them to use their powers. Now I was about to send them unprepared into the most dangerous battle of all time.
Carter, Bost said, they're not ready.
They have to be, I said. If the first gnome falls, it's all over. Apophis will attack us in Egypt at the source of our power. We have to stand together with the chief lector.
One last battle.
Walt gazed sadly at the great room, maybe wondering whether or not he'd die before that battle happened.
Should we break the news to others?
Not yet, I said. The rebel magician's attack on the first gnome won't happen until tomorrow. Let the kids have one last day at school. Bost, When they come home this afternoon, I want you to lead them to Egypt. Use Freak. Use whatever magic you have to. If all goes well in the underworld, Sadie and I will join you before the attack.
If all goes well, Bast said dryly. Yes, that happens a lot.
She glanced over at the sun god who was trying to eat the doorknob to Sadie's room.
What about Ra? She asked. If Apophis is going to attack in 2 days.
Ra has to keep making his nightly journey, I said. That's part of Maat. We can't mess with it. But on the morning of the equinox, he'll need to be in Egypt. He'll have to face Apophis.
Like that.
Bast gestured toward the old god.
In his loincloth.
I know, I admitted. It sounds crazy, but Apophis still thinks Ra is a threat. Maybe facing Apophis in battle will remind Ra who he is. He might rise to the challenge and become what he used to be. Walt and Bast didn't answer. I could tell from their expressions that they didn't buy it. Neither did I. Ra was gumming Sadie's doorknob with intent to kill, but I didn't think he'd be much good against the Lord of Chaos. Still, it felt good to have a plan of action. That was much better than standing around, dwelling on the hopelessness of our situation. Use today to organize, I told Bast. Gather up the most valuable scrolls, amulets, weapons, anything we can use to help the first gnome. Let Amos know you're coming. Walt and I will head to the underworld and meet Sadie. We'll rendezvous with you in Cairo.
Bast pursed her lips. All right, Carter. But be careful of Setna. However bad you think he is, he's 10 times worse.
Hey, we defeated the god of evil, I reminded her. Bast shook her head.
Set is a god. He doesn't change. Even with a god of chaos, you can pretty much predict how he'll act. Setna, on the other hand, he has both power and human unpredictability. Don't trust him. Swear to me.
That's easy, I said. I promise. Walt folded his arms. So how are we going to get to the underworld? Portals are unreliable. We're leaving Freak here, and the boat is destroyed.
I have another boat in mind, I said, trying to believe it was a good idea. I'm going to summon an old friend.
9. Zia breaks up a lava fight. I'd become quite an expert at visiting the godly nursing home, which was a sad statement on my life. The first time Carter and I found our way there, we had travelled the River of Night, plunged down a fiery waterfall, and almost died in a lake of lava. Since then, I'd discovered I could simply call on Isis to transport me, as she could open doorways to many locations in the Duat. Honestly, though, dealing with Isis was almost as annoying as swimming through fire. After my Shopti conversation with Carter, I joined Zia on a limestone cliff overlooking the Nile. It was already midday in Egypt. Getting over portal lag had taken me longer than I'd expected. After changing into more sensible clothes, I'd had a quick lunch and one more strategy talk with Amos deep in the Hall of Ages. Then Zia and I had climbed back to the surface. Now we stood at a ruined shrine to Isis on the river just south of Cairo. It was a good place to summon the goddess, but we didn't have much time. Zia still wore her combat outfit, camouflage cargo pants and an olive tank top. Her staff was slung over her back and her wand hung at her belt. She rummaged through her pack, checking her supplies one last time. "What did Carter see?" she asked. "That's right, brother dear. I stepped out of earshot before I contacted you, so Zia didn't hear any of those teasing comments. Honestly, I'm not that mean. I told her what we'd discussed, but I couldn't bring myself to share how my mum's spirit was in danger. I'd known about the problem in general terms since I'd spoken with Anubis, of course, but the knowledge that our mother's ghost was huddled under a cliff somewhere in the Duat, resisting the pull of the serpent's shadow, well, that bit of information had lodged in my chest like a bullet. If I tried to touch it, I feared it would go straight to my heart and kill me. I explained about my villainous ghost friend, Uncle Vinny, and how we intended to solicit his help. Sia looked appalled. Sedna? As in the Sedna? Does Carter realize... Yep. And Todd suggested this? Yep. And you're actually going along with it? Yep. She gazed down the Nile. Perhaps she was thinking of her home village, which had stood on the banks of this river until it was destroyed by the forces of Apophis. Perhaps she was imagining her entire homeland crumbling into the sea of chaos. I expected her to tell me that our plan was insane. I thought she might abandon me and go back to the first gnome. But I suppose she had got used to the Kane family, poor girl. She must have known by now that all our plans were insane. Fine, she said. How do we reach this nursing home of the gods? Just a mo. I closed my eyes and concentrated. Yoo-hoo, Isis, I thought. Anyone home? Sadie, the goddess answered immediately. In my mind, she appeared as a regal woman with dark braided hair. Her dress was gossamer white. Her prismatic wings shimmered like sunlight rippling through clear water. I wanted to smack her. Well, well, I said, if it isn't my good friend who decides whom I can and can't date. She had the nerve to look surprised. Are you speaking of Anubis? Right first try. I should have left it at that, since I needed Isis's help, but seeing her floating there all shiny and queenly made me angrier than ever. Where do you get the nerve, eh? Going behind my back, lobbying to keep Anubis away from me. How is that your business? Surprisingly, Isis kept her temper. Sadie, there are things you don't understand. There are rules. Rules? I demanded. The world is about to end, and you're worried about which boys are socially acceptable for me. Isis steepled her fingers. The two issues are more connected than you realize. The traditions of Mart must be followed, or chaos wins. Immortals and mortals can only interact in specific, limited ways. Besides, you cannot afford to be distracted. I'm doing you a favor.
A favor? I said. If you want to do me a real favor, we need passage to the fourth house of the night, the house of rest, Sunny Acres, or whatever you want to call it. After that, you can butt out of my private life. Perhaps that was rude of me, but Isis had stepped over the line. Besides, why should I act proper with a goddess who had previously rented space in my head? Isis should have known me better. The goddess sighed.
Sadie, proximity to the gods is dangerous. It must be regulated with utmost care. You know this. Your uncle is still tainted from his experience with Set. Even your friend Zia is struggling.
What do you mean? I asked.
If you join with me, you'll understand, Isis promised. Your mind will be clear. It's past time we united again and combined our strength.
There it was, the sales pitch. Every time I called on Isis, she tried to persuade me to meld with her as we'd done before, mortal and god inhabiting one body, acting with a single will. Each time I said no. So, I ventured, proximity to the gods is dangerous, but you're anxious to join forces with me again. I'm glad you're looking out for my safety. Isis narrowed her eyes.
Our situation is different, Sadie. You need my strength.
Certainly it was tempting. Having the full power of a goddess at my command was quite a rush. As the Eye of Isis, I would feel confident, unstoppable, completely without fear. One could get addicted to such power, and that was the problem. Isis could be a good friend, but her agenda wasn't always best for the mortal world, or for Sadie Kane.
she was driven by her loyalty to her son, Horus. She'd do anything to see him on the throne of the gods. She was ambitious, vengeful, power-hungry, and envious of anyone who might have more magic than she did. She claimed my mind would be clearer if I let her in. What she really meant was that I'd start seeing things her way. It would be harder to separate my thoughts from hers. I might even come to believe she was right by keeping Anubis and me apart. Horrifying idea. Unfortunately, Isis had a point about joining forces. Sooner or later, we'd have to. There was no other way I'd have the power to challenge Apophis. But now wasn't the time. I wanted to remain Sadie Kane as long as possible, just my own wonderful self, without any godly hitchhiker. Soon, I told Isis. I have things to do first. I need to be sure my decisions are my own. Now, about that doorway to the House of Rest? Isis was quite good at looking hurt and disapproving at the same time, which must have made her an impossible mother. I almost felt sorry for Horus. Sadie Kane, she said, you are my favorite mortal, my chosen magician, and still you do not trust me. I didn't bother to contradict her. Isis knew how I felt. The goddess spread her arms in resignation. Very well, but the path of the gods is the only answer for all the Kanes, and for that one. She nodded in Zia's direction. You will need to advise her, Sadie. She must learn the path quickly. What do you mean? I asked again. I really wished she would stop talking in riddles. Gods are so annoying that way. Zia was a much more experienced magician than I was. I didn't know how I could advise her. Besides, Zia was a fire elementalist. She tolerated us Kanes, but she had never shown the slightest interest in the path of the gods. Good luck, Isis said. I will await your call. The image of the goddess rippled and vanished. When I opened my eyes, a square of darkness the size of a doorway hovered in the air. Sadie? Zia asked. You were silent for so long. I was getting worried. No need. I tried for a smile. Isis just likes to talk. Next stop, the fourth house of the night. I'll be honest. I never quite understood the difference between the swirling sand portals that magicians can summon with artifacts and the doors of darkness that gods are able to conjure. Perhaps the gods use a more advanced wireless network. Perhaps they simply have better aim. For whatever reason, Isis's portal worked much more reliably than the one I'd created to get to Cairo. It deposited us right in the lobby of Sunny Acres. As soon as we stepped through, Zia scanned our surroundings and frowned. Where is everyone? Good question. We'd arrived at the correct godly nursing home, the same potted plants, the same massive lobby with windows looking out on the lake of fire, the same rows of limestone columns plastered with tacky posters of smiling seniors and mottos like, "These are your golden centuries." But the nurse's station was unattended. IV poles were clustered in one corner like they were having a conference. The sofas were empty. The coffee tables were littered with half-played games of checkers and Senet. Ugh, I hate Senet. I stared at an empty wheelchair, wondering where its occupant had gone, when suddenly the chair burst into flames, collapsing in a pile of charred leather and half-melted steel. I stumbled backward. Behind me, Zia held a ball of white-hot fire in her hand. Her eyes were as wild as a cornered animal's. "Are you mad?" I yelled. "What are you—" She lobbed her second fireball at the nurse's station. A vase full of daisies exploded in a shower of flaming petals and pottery shards. "Sia?" She didn't seem to hear me. She summoned another fireball and took aim at the sofas. I should have run for cover. I wasn't prepared to die saving badly upholstered furniture. Instead, I lunged at her and grabbed her wrist. "Zia, stop it!" She glared at me with flames in her eyes, and I mean that quite literally. Her irises had become disks of orange fire. This was terrifying, of course, but I stood my ground. Over the past year, I'd got rather used to surprises, what with my cat being a goddess, my brother turning into a falcon, and Felix producing penguins in the fireplace several times a week. "Zia," I said firmly, "we can't burn down the nursing home. What's got into you?" A look of confusion passed over her face. She stopped struggling. Her eyes returned to normal. She stared at the melted wheelchair, then the smouldering remains of the bouquet on the carpet. "Did I decide those daisies needed to die?" I finished. "Yes, you did." She extinguished her fireball, which was lucky as it was starting to bake my face. "I'm sorry," she muttered. I thought I had it under control." "Under control?" I let go of her hand. "You mean to say you've been throwing a lot of random fireballs lately?" She still looked bewildered, her gaze drifting around the lobby.
"No. Maybe. I've been having blackouts. I come to and I don't remember what I've done."
"Like just now?" She nodded.
"Amos said at first he thought it might be a side effect of my time in that tomb."
Ah, the tomb. For months, Zia had been trapped in a watery sarcophagus while her Shapti ran about impersonating her. The chief lector, Iskandar, had thought this would protect the real Zia. From Set, from Apophis, we still weren't sure. At any rate, it didn't strike me as the most brilliant idea for a supposedly wise 2,000-year-old magician to have come up with. During her slumbers, Zia had endured horrible nightmares about her village burning and Apophis destroying the world. I suppose that might lead to some nasty post-traumatic stress. "You said Amos thought that at first," I noted. "There's more to the story, then?" Zia gazed at the melted wheelchair. The light from outside turned her hair the colour of rusted iron.
"He was here,"
she murmured.
"He was here for eons, trapped."
I took a moment to process that. "You mean Ra?"
"He was miserable and alone,"
she said.
"He had been forced to abdicate his throne. He left the mortal world and lost the will to live."
I stamped at a smouldering daisy on the carpet. "I don't know, Zia. He looked quite happy when we woke him up, singing and grinning and so on."
"No."
Zia walked toward the windows, as if drawn by the lovely view of Brimstone.
"His mind is still sleeping. I've spent time with him, Sadie. I've watched his expressions while he naps. I've heard him whimpering and mumbling. That old body is a cage, a prison. The true Ra is trapped inside."
She was starting to worry me now. Fireballs I could deal with. Incoherent rambling, not so much. "I suppose it makes sense you'd have sympathy with Ra," I ventured. "You're a fire elementalist. He's a fiery sort of god. You were trapped in that tomb. Ra was trapped in a nursing home. Perhaps that's what caused your blackout just now. This place reminded you of your own imprisonment." "That's right. Sadie Kane, junior psychologist. And why not? I'd spent enough time diagnosing my crazed mates Liz and Emma back in London." Zia stared out at the burning lake. I had the feeling that my attempt at therapy might not have been so therapeutic.
"Amos tried to help me," she said. "He knows what I'm going through. He cast a spell on me to focus my mind, but..."
She shook her head.
"It's been getting worse. This is the first day in weeks that I haven't taken care of Ra, and the more time I spend with him, the fuzzier my thoughts get. When I summon fire now, I have trouble controlling it. Even simple spells I've done for years. I channel too much power. If that happens during a blackout..."
I understood why she sounded frightened. Magicians have to be careful with spells. If we channel too much power, we might inadvertently exhaust our reserves. Then the spell would tap directly into the magician's life force, with unpleasant consequences.
"You will need to advise her,"
Isis had told me.
"She must learn the path quickly."
An uncomfortable thought began to form. I remembered Ra's delight when he had first met Zia, the way he'd tried to give her his last remaining scarab beetle. He'd babbled on and on about zebras, possibly meaning Zia, and now Zia was starting to empathize with the old god, even trying to burn down the nursing home where he'd been trapped for so long. That couldn't be good, but how could I advise her when I had no idea what was happening? Isis's warnings rattled around in my head. The path of the gods was the answer for all the Kanes. Zia was struggling. Amos was still tainted by his time with Set. "Zia," I hesitated, "you said Amos knows what you're going through. Is that why he asked Bast to watch Ra today? To give you time away from the sun god?
I suppose.
I tried to steady my breathing. Then I asked the harder question. In the war room, Amos said he might have to use other means to fight his enemies. He hasn't been having trouble with Set. Zia wouldn't meet my eyes.
Sadie, I promised him.
Oh, gods of Egypt, he's calling on Set, trying to channel his power after all Set did to him. Please, no. She didn't answer, which was an answer in itself. He'll be overwhelmed, I cried. If the rebel magicians find out that the chief lector is meddling with the god of evil just as they suspected...
Set isn't just the god of evil,
Zia reminded me.
He is Ra's lieutenant. He defended the sun god against Apophis.
You think that makes it all better? I shook my head in disbelief. And now Amos thinks you're having trouble with Ra. Does he think Ra is trying to... I pointed to Zia's head.
Sadie, please.
Her voice trailed off in misery. I suppose it wasn't fair for me to press her. She seemed even more confused than I was. Still, I hated the idea of Zia being disoriented so close to our final battle, blacking out, throwing random fireballs, losing control of her own power. Even worse was the possibility that Amos had some sort of link with Set, that he might actually have chosen to let that horrible god back into his head. The thought tied my gut into tides, Isis knots. I imagined my old enemy, Michel Desjardins, scowling...
Ne voyez-vous pas, Sadie Kane? This is what comes from the path of the gods. This is why the magic was forbidden.
I kicked the melted remains of the wheelchair. One bent wheel squeaked and wobbled. We'll have to table that conversation, I decided. We're running out of time. Now, where have all the old folks gone? Zia pointed out the window.
There,
she said calmly.
They're having a beach day.
We made our way down to the black sand beach by the Lake of Fire. It wouldn't have been my top vacation spot, but elderly gods were lounging on deck chairs under brightly coloured umbrellas. Others snored on beach towels or sat in their wheelchairs and stared at the boiling vista. One shrivelled bird-headed goddess in a one-piece bathing suit was building a sand pyramid. Two old men, I assumed they were fire gods, stood waist-deep in the blazing surf, laughing and splashing lava in each other's faces. Tawarit, the caretaker, beamed when she saw us.
Sadie, she called, you're early this week, and you've brought a friend.
Normally, I wouldn't have stood still as an upright, grinning female hippo charged toward me for a hug, but I'd got used to Tawarit. She'd traded her high heels for flip-flops. Otherwise, she was dressed in her usual white nurse's uniform. Her mascara and lipstick were tastefully done, for a hippo, and her luxuriant black hair was pinned under a nurse's cap. Her ill-fitting blouse opened over an enormous belly, possibly a sign of permanent pregnancy, as she was the goddess of childbirth, or possibly a sign of eating too many cupcakes. I'd never been entirely sure. She embraced me without crushing me, which I greatly appreciated. Her lilac perfume reminded me of my gran, and the tinge of sulphur on her clothes reminded me of Gramps. Tawarit, I said, this is Zia Rashid. Tawarit's smile faded.
Oh, I see.
I'd never seen the hippo goddess so uneasy. Did she somehow know that Zia had melted her wheelchair and torched her daisies? As the silence got awkward, Tawarit recovered her smile.
Sorry, yes. Hello, Zia. It's just that you look... Well, never mind. Are you a friend of Bess's too? Not really,
Zia admitted.
I mean, I suppose, but...
We're here on a mission, I said. Things in the upper world have gone a bit wonky. I told Tawarit about the rebel magicians, Apophis's plans for attack, and our mad scheme to find the serpent's shadow and stomp it to death. Tawarit mashed her hippoish hands together.
Oh, dear. Doomsday tomorrow. Bingo night was supposed to be Friday. My poor darlings will be so disappointed.
She glanced down the beach at her senile charges, some of whom were drooling in their sleep, or eating black sand, or trying to talk to the lava. Tawarit sighed.
I suppose it would be kinder not to tell them. They've been here for eons, forgotten by the mortal world. Now they have to perish along with everyone else. They don't deserve such a fate.
I wanted to remind her that no one deserved such a fate. Not my friends, not my family, and certainly not a brilliant young woman named Sadie Kane, who had her whole life ahead of her. But Tawarit was so kind-hearted, I didn't want to sound selfish. She didn't seem concerned for herself at all, just the fading gods she cared for. We're not giving up yet, I promised.
But this plan of yours...
Tawarit shuddered, causing a tsunami of jiggling hippo flesh.
It's impossible.
Like reviving the sun god, I asked. She conceded that with a shrug.
Very well, dear. I'll admit you've done the impossible before. Nevertheless...
She glanced at Zia, as if my friend's presence still made her nervous.
Well, I'm sure you know what you're doing. How can I help?
May we see Bess? I asked.
Of course, but I'm afraid he hasn't changed.
She led us down the beach. The past few months I'd visited Bess at least once a week, so I knew many of the elderly gods by sight. I spotted Heket, the frog goddess, perched atop a beach umbrella as if it were a lily pad. Her tongue shot out to catch something from the air. Did they have flies in the Duat? Farther on, I saw the goose god, Gengen Wur, whose name, I kid you not, meant the Great Honker. The first time Tawarit told me that, I almost spewed tea. His supreme honkiness was waddling along the beach, squawking at the other gods and startling them out of their sleep. Yet every time I visited, the crowd changed. Some gods disappeared, others popped up. Gods of cities that no longer existed. Gods who had only been worshipped for a few centuries before being replaced by others. Gods so old they'd forgot their own names. Most civilizations left behind pottery shards or monuments or literature. Egypt was so old it had left behind a landfill's worth of deities. Halfway down the beach, we passed the two old codgers who'd been playing in the lava. Now they were wrestling waist-deep in the lake. One pummeled the other with an ankh and warbled, "It's my pudding! My pudding!"
"Oh, dear,"
Tawarit said.
"Fire Embracer and Hot Foot are at it again."
I choked back a laugh. "Hot Foot? What sort of godly name is that?" Tawarit studied the fiery surf, as if looking for a way to navigate through it without getting incinerated.
"They're gods from the Hall of Judgment, dear. Poor things. There used to be 42 of them, each in charge of judging a different crime. Even in the old days, we could never keep them all straight. Now,"
she shrugged,
"they're quite forgotten, sadly. Fire Embracer, the one with the ankh, he used to be the god of robberies. I'm afraid it made him paranoid. He always thinks Hotfoot has stolen his pudding. I'll have to break up the fight."
"Let me," Zia said. Tawarit stiffened.
"You, my dear?"
I got the feeling she was going to say something other than dear.
"The fire won't bother me," Zia assured her. "You two go ahead."
I wasn't sure how Zia could be so confident. Perhaps she simply preferred swimming in flames to seeing Bess in his present state. If so, I couldn't blame her. The experience was unsettling. Whatever the case, Zia strode toward the surf and waded straight in like a flame-retardant Baywatch lifeguard. Tawarit and I continued along the beach. We reached the dock where Ra's sunboat had anchored the first time Carter and I had visited this place. Bess sat at the end of the pier in a comfy leather chair, which Tawarit must have brought down especially for him. He wore a fresh red and blue Hawaiian shirt and khaki shorts. His face was thinner than it had been last spring, but otherwise he looked unchanged. The same scraggly nest of black hair, the same bristly mane that passed for a beard, the same lovably grotesque face that reminded me of a pug dog's. But Bess's soul was gone. He stared vacantly at the lake, not reacting at all when I knelt next to him and gripped his furry hand. I remembered the first time he'd saved my life, picking me up in a limo full of rubbish, driving me to Waterloo Bridge, then scaring away two gods who had been chasing me. He had jumped out of the car wearing nothing but a Speedo and screamed boo. Yes, he'd been a true friend. "Dear Bess," I said, "we're going to try to help you."
I told him everything that had happened since my last visit. I knew he couldn't hear me. Since his secret name had been stolen, his mind simply wasn't there. But talking to him made me feel better. Tawarit sniffled. I knew she had loved Bess forever, though Bess hadn't always returned her feelings. He couldn't have had a better caretaker.
Oh, Sadie,
the hippo goddess wiped away a tear.
If you truly could help him, I'd do anything. But how is it possible?
Shadows, I said. This bloke Setna, he found a way to use shadows for an execration spell. If the Shut is a backup copy of the soul, and if Setna's magic could be used in reverse, Tawarit's eyes widened.
You believe you could use Bess's shadow to bring him back?
Yes. I knew it sounded mad, but I had to believe. Saying it aloud to Tawarit, who cared about Bess even more than I did, well, I simply couldn't let her down. Besides, if we could do this for Bess, then who knew? Perhaps we could use the same magic to get the sun god Ra back in fighting shape. First things first, however, I intended to keep my promise to the dwarf god. Here's the tricky bit, I said. I'm hoping you can help me locate Bess's shadow. I don't know much about gods and their shuts and whatnot. I understand that you often hide them. Tawarit shifted nervously, her feet creaking on the pier boards.
Yes.
I'm hoping they're a bit like secret names, I forged on. Since I can't ask Bess where he keeps his shadow, I thought I'd ask the person who was closest to him. I thought you'd have the best chance of knowing. Seeing a hippo blush is quite odd. It almost made Tawarit look delicate, in a massive sort of way.
I saw his shadow once,
she admitted,
during one of our best moments together. We were sitting on the temple wall in Sais.
Sorry?
A city in the Nile Delta,
Tawarit explained.
The home of a friend of ours, the hunting goddess, Neet. She liked to invite Bess and me on her hunting excursions. We would, flush her prey for her.
I imagined Tawarit and Bess, two gods with super ugly powers, ploughing through the marshes hand in hand, yelling boo to scare up bevies of quail. I decided to keep that image to myself.
At any rate,
Tawarit continued,
one night after dinner, Bess and I were sitting alone on the walls of Neet's temple, watching the moon rise over the Nile.
She gazed at the dwarf god with such adoring eyes, I couldn't help but imagine myself on that temple wall, sharing a romantic evening with Anubis. No, Walt. No. Gah! My life was horrid. I sighed unhappily. Go on, please.
We talked about nothing in particular,
Tawarit remembered.
We held hands, that was all. But I felt so close to him. Just for a moment, I looked at the mud brick wall next to us, and I saw Bess's shadow in the torchlight. Normally guards don't keep their shadows so close. He must have trusted me a great deal to reveal it. I asked him about it, and he laughed. He said, "This is a good place for my shadow. I think I'll leave it here. That way it can always be happy, even when I'm not."
The story was so sweet and sad I could hardly bear it. Down the shore, the old god Fire Embracer shrieked something about pudding. Zia was standing in the surf, trying to keep the two gods apart as they splashed her with lava from both sides. Amazingly, it didn't seem to bother her. I turned to Tawarit. That night in Sais, how long ago was it?
A few thousand years.
My heart sank. Any chance the shadow would still be there? She shrugged helplessly.
Sais was destroyed centuries ago. The temple is gone. Farmers pulled down the ancient buildings and used the mud bricks for fertilizer. Most of the land has reverted to marshes.
Blast! I'd never been a fan of Egyptian ruins. From time to time, I'd been tempted to pull down a few temples myself. But just this once, I wished the ruins had survived. I wanted to cuff those farmers. Then there's no hope? I asked.
Oh, there's always hope,
Tawarit said.
You could search the area, calling on Bess's shadow. You're his friend. It might appear to you if it's still there. And if Neet is still in the area, she might be able to help. That is, if she doesn't hunt you instead.
I decided not to dwell on that possibility. I had enough problems. We'll have to try. If we can find the shadow and puzzle out the proper spell...
But Sadie,
the goddess said, you have so little time. You have to stop Apophis. How can you help Bess too? I looked at the dwarf god. Then I bent down and kissed his bumpy forehead. I made a promise, I said. Besides, we'll need him if we're going to win. Did I really believe that? I knew Bess couldn't scare Apophis away simply by yelling boo, no matter how ghastly he looked in his speedo. In the sort of battle we were facing, I wasn't sure one more god would even make a difference, and I was even less sure that this reverse shadow idea could work on Ra. But I had to try with Bess. If the world ended the day after tomorrow, I would not go to my death without first knowing I'd done everything I could to save my friend. Of all the goddesses I'd met, Tawarit was the most likely to understand my motives. She put her hands protectively on Bess's shoulders.
In that case, Sadie Kane, I wish you luck. For Bess, and for all of us.
I left her on the dock, standing behind Bess as if the two gods were enjoying a romantic sunset together. On the beach, I rejoined Zia, who was brushing ashes out of her hair. Except for a few burn holes in her trousers, she looked perfectly fine. She gestured at Fire Embracer and Hotfoot, who were once again playing nice in the lava.
They're not so bad, Zia said. They just needed some attention.
Like pets, I said, or my brother. Zia actually smiled.
Did you find the information you need?
I think so, I said. But first, we need to get to the Hall of Judgment. It's almost time for Setna's trial.
How do we get there?
Zia asked.
Another doorway?
I stared across the Lake of Fire, pondering that problem. I remembered the Hall of Judgment being on an island somewhere on this lake, but Duat geography is a bit dodgy. For all I knew, the hall was on a totally different level of the Duat, or the lake was 6 billion miles wide. I didn't fancy the idea of walking around the shore through unknown territory or taking a swim, and I certainly didn't feel like arguing with Isis again. Then I saw something across the fiery waves, the silhouette of a familiar steamboat approaching, twin smokestacks trailing luminous gold smoke and a paddle wheel churning through the lava. My brother, bless his heart, was absolutely mad. Problem solved, I told Zia. Carter will give us a ride. 10. Take your daughter to work day goes horribly wrong. As they approached the dock, Carter and Walt waved at us from the bow of the Egyptian Queen. Next to them stood the captain, blood-stained Blade, who looked quite dashing in his riverboat pilot's uniform, except for the fact that his head was a blood-speckled double-sided axe.
That's a demon,
Zia said nervously. Yes, I agreed.
Is it safe?
I raised an eyebrow at her.
Of course not,
she muttered.
I'm travelling with the Canes.
The crew of glowing orbs zipped around the boat, pulling lines and lowering the gangplank. Carter looked tired. He wore jeans and a rumpled shirt with specks of barbecue sauce on it. His hair was wet and flat on one side as if he'd fallen asleep in the shower. Walt looked much better. Well, really, there was no contest. He wore his usual sleeveless shirt and workout pants, and managed a smile for me, even though his posture made it obvious he was in pain. The Shen charm on my necklace seemed to heat up, or perhaps that was just my body temperature rising. Zia and I climbed the gangplank. Blood-stained Blade bowed, which was quite unnerving, as his head could have sliced a watermelon in half.
"Welcome aboard, Lady Kane."
His voice was a metallic hum from the edge of his frontal blade.
"I am at your service."
"Thanks ever so," I said. "Carter, may I speak with you?" I grabbed his ear and pulled him toward the deckhouse. "Ow!" he complained as I dragged him along. I suppose doing that in front of Zia wasn't nice, but I thought I might as well give her pointers on how best to handle my brother. Walt and Zia followed us into the main dining room. As usual, the mahogany table was laden with platters of fresh food. The chandelier illuminated colourful wall murals of Egyptian gods, the gilded columns and ornately moulded ceiling. I let go of Carter's ear and snarled, Have you lost your mind? Ow! He yelled again. What is your problem? My problem, I said, lowering my voice, is that you summoned this boat again and its demon captain, who Bast warned would slit our throats if he ever got the opportunity. He's under a magic binding, Carter argued. He was fine last time. Last time Bast was with us, I reminded him, and if you think I trust a demon named Bloodstained Blade farther than I can... Guys, Walt interrupted. Bloodstained Blade entered the dining room, dipping his axe head under the doorframe. Lord and Lady King, the journey is short from here. We will arrive at the Hall of Judgment in approximately 20 minutes. Thanks, BSB, Carter said as he rubbed his ear. We'll join you on deck soon. Very good, said the demon. What are your orders when we arrive? I tensed, hoping Carter had thought ahead. Bast had warned us that demons needed very clear instructions to stay under control. You'll wait for us while we visit the Hall of Judgment, Carter announced. When we return, you'll take us where we wish to go.
As you say.
Bloodstained Blade's tone had a hint of disappointment, or was that my imagination? After he left, Zia frowned.
Carter, in this case, I agree with Sadie. How can you trust that creature? Where did you get this ship?
It belonged to our parents, Carter said. He and I shared a look, silently agreeing that was enough said. Our mum and dad had sailed this riverboat up the Thames to Cleopatra's Needle the night mum had died, releasing Bast from the abyss. Afterward, Dad had sat in this very room, grieving, with only the cat goddess and the demon captain for company. Bloodstained Blade had accepted us as his new masters. He'd followed our orders before, but that was little comfort. I didn't trust him. I didn't like being on this ship. On the other hand, we needed to get to the Hall of Judgment. I was hungry and thirsty, and I supposed I could endure a 20-minute voyage if it meant enjoying a chilled Ribena and a plate of tandoori chicken with naan. The four of us sat around the table. We ate while we compared stories. All in all, it was quite possibly the most awkward double date in history. We had no shortage of dire emergencies to talk about, but the tension in the room was as thick as Cairo smog. Carter hadn't seen Zia in person for months. I could tell he was trying not to stare. Zia was clearly uncomfortable sitting so close to him. She kept leaning away, which no doubt hurt his feelings. Perhaps she was just worried about having another fireball-throwing episode. As for me, I was elated to be next to Walt, but at the same time I was desperately worried about him. I couldn't forget how he'd looked wrapped in glowing mummy linen, and I wondered what Anubis had wanted to tell me about Walt's situation. Walt tried to hide it, but he was obviously in great pain. His hands trembled as he picked up his peanut butter sandwich. Carter told me about the pending evacuation of Brooklyn House, which Bast was overseeing. My heart nearly broke when I thought of little Shelby, wonderful, silly Felix, shy Cleo, and all the rest going off to defend the first gnome against an impossible attack. But I knew Carter was right. There was no other choice. Carter kept hesitating, as if waiting for Walt to contribute information. Walt stayed silent. Clearly, he was holding something back. Somehow or other, I'd have to get Walt alone and grill him for details. In return, I told Carter about our visit to the House of Rest. I shared my suspicions that Amos might be calling on Set for extra power. Zia didn't contradict me, and the news didn't sit well with my brother. After several minutes of swearing and pacing the room, he finally calmed down enough to say, "We can't let that happen. He'll be destroyed." "I know," I said, "but we can best help him by moving forward." I didn't mention Zia's blackout in the nursing home. In Carter's present state of mind, I thought that might be too much for him, but I did tell him what Tawarit had said about the possible location of Bess's shadow. "The ruins of Seus," he frowned. "I think Dad mentioned that place. He said there wasn't much left. But even if we could find the shadow, we don't have time. We've got to stop Apophis." I made a promise, I insisted. Besides, we need Bess. Think of it as a trial run. Saving his shadow will give us a chance to practice this sort of magic before we try it on Apophis. In reverse, of course, it might even give us a way to revive Ra. But
she's got a point, Walt interrupted.
I'm not sure who was more surprised, Carter or me.
Even if we get Setna's help, Walt said, trapping a shadow in a statue is going to be difficult. I'd feel better if we could try it on a friendly target first. I could show you how it's done while I still have time.
Walt, I said, please don't talk like that.
When you face Apophis, he continued, you'll have only one chance to get the spell right. It would be